All right, I would like to call the meeting of our Education Committee, Monday, September 30th, 12:30, 1 p.m. to order. The first item on our agenda is approval of the minutes from the August 5th, 2019 meeting. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye. No.
All right. Moving on to the next item of the agenda, we have time for public comments. You will have 2 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record. And this will be the only opportunity for the public to speak. So if you are ready to speak on any of the issues on our agenda, please feel free to come, or on anything at all. Feel free. Oh, great.
Hey, how are y'all? I'm Sarah Johnson. I actually do not live in the town. I live in unincorporated, so I'm off of Gerald Creek Trail on Flannery Place, but I am the chair of the District 2 Constituent School Board, which represents all of District 2 and all of Mount Pleasant. So I'm speaking in that capacity as chair. And I just want to thank you for having these two very important issues on your agenda, bus transportation and D2. Our board is very concerned about it as well. And I believe Mr. Scott must be on tour because I think he's going to come talk to our board next month. So just know the county school board, that's who is in charge of course, the contract with the bus services. But the constituent board is also concerned, and so we are listening too. Your other item that you have, thank you for looking into the partial magnet proposal to eliminate school choice for some of those over in D2. And that is a little bit more crossing over into what the District 2 Constituent Board does and what our duties are. We are actually in charge of the assignment of all students in District 2 to our schools. And so I just want the committee members today to know that our board has opposed the recommendation to end school choice at Sullivan's Island Lang and James P. Edwards, and we have made a recommendation that the school district or the school board spend at least a year looking into the matter. And, you know, if you know what it takes to rezone schools, we've spent the last 2 years rezoning, and it takes a year to rezone, and we give a year of notice. And so a sudden change that sends a bunch of kids back to Mount Pleasant schools from Sullivan's Island, and it switches, takes kids out of Lang, means there's no easy fix to that. Rezoning would have to come, and that's going to be after a period of numbers dwindling at some schools and getting overcrowded at other schools. and part of the proposal, which we were concerned about, and tell me if I'm going over 2 minutes, but is the part, this is where Town of Mount Pleasant would be concerned about traffic. There's a note that if we take away the partial magnet choice, that kids can used a transfer policy to get into these schools, Lang, Sullivan's Island. Those are the two big ones with big numbers, lots, hundreds of students or partial magnet students there. It would be very unlikely that our board would let hundreds and hundreds of students transfer into these schools, because if you're a transfer student, you don't get bus transportation. That means all those families would be on the road going to Lang and going to Sullivan's Island. And so that is another concern. We don't expect that we would be transferring hundreds of students into these schools. But anyway, so those are our concerns. We're always here to work with you, and we hope we come to a good solution on this.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak, make public comment? All right, moving on to the next item of the agenda is the Charleston County School District report on student transportation. Now, the reason that I placed this on the agenda is, you know, just for a while, I mean, over the years, I've been seeing just posts on mom groups of people having trouble with the busing system. They're emailing the transportation, you know, Durham bus services twice a day. There was a speaker, a father and son, who spoke at the last D2 constituent board meeting that I attended, that his son's like, I'm late to school 40 minutes almost every day. And there was, he said there were 30 kids at his bus stop the first week of school, and it's dropped down to 6 kids now because the bus is so unreliable. I was reached out to directly by another mother whose daughter is at Wando and was just talking about how they're missing class like every day because of this incident. And my daughter attends School of the Arts and is on a bus there, and for her it's been fine thus far, but the bus has no air conditioning, there's no seat belts, and she's coming home sweaty and tired. And then she also came home one day and said, oh, my driver said that you're not going to be here for the next 2 days, so I need to figure out another way to get to school. And I was like, oh, okay, well, let's figure that out. So it's impacted me personally. It's impacted numerous moms and dads in this town. So I just wanted to invite the school district to come speak to us on this issue and what sort of solutions they're working towards. So, Mr. Scott?
Good afternoon. I'm Jeff Barowie, the Chief Operating Officer for the district. On behalf of Dr. Postlewaite, we appreciate the opportunity to speak to you all today. The last time we were here was December of last year. We had a number of topics to present then, so I think it's a great opportunity to bring forward the issue of the day. With us today are two of our county board members, Mrs. Kate Darby and Ms. Joyce Green. Ms. Darby and Terry Nichols will talk to you about partial magnets, so they'll be up second. And I've got Jeff Scott here, our Director of Transportation, and he'll open the cover. What we have in the district, what we're facing in the district, like every school district is facing around the state, and I'm sure the town is facing with hiring FEMA watchers and other folks like that. We run into the same challenges. But Jeff will talk to you about the challenges we have, what we're doing to try to overcome them, and what the future looks like for us coming up next year. All right. Jeff.
Good afternoon. First, I do appreciate the opportunity to come back to town of Mount Pleasant. Okay, I started my career here in 1993 with the police department, and I stayed until 2005. And working for the town was truly a blessing for me and my family. Having started there and then moved on to the school district in 2005, I served as emergency manager there before coming over to transportation. But I appreciate the opportunity to come back here and talk with you today. Just to give you some by the numbers, just an idea of where we stand on a countywide basis, and then what we call Area A, which is Allendale and Mount Pleasant together, look like, because that's how we separate our business on a daily basis. So countywide, we have 370 bus routes to run, a little over 1,300 bus runs a day, and what those 370 buses turn into is 2 to 3 tiers. Normally, at least 2 tiers for each bus. So that's 4 bus runs a day. Home to school is your first one. Your next one being your second, which would be your middle schools and high schools here in Mount Pleasant, is home to school. And then you have 2 trips back in the afternoon. Ridership in the morning, we just completed our numbers count last week. It's 19,000 in the morning across the district and 21,000 students in the afternoon. So I'm going to break that down for you for this area. There's 99 route buses in Area A. That's about 330 bus runs a day for the buses. Our ridership in the morning is 4,500, and our ridership in the afternoon is 5,700. All right, and I'll talk about that in a minute on what that allows us to do or doesn't allow us to do at certain times of day. For as far as fleet, we use 2 bus fleets. One is owned by the state of South Carolina, and one is owned by the vendor, Durham School Services. The state fleet, if you go back and read any newspaper articles from the last 20 years, it really was in bad shape and old. But they have actually done, I think, a tremendous job over the last 5 years on updating that fleet. So our average age for a state bus fleet right now is 7 years old. And it was 12 to 15 back in 2014. So everything they're bringing in now, and they continue to bring in, to get to that cycle where they can get on replace the fleet over a 15-year time frame. Everything that does come in now does have air conditioning. And then right now our fleet is 71% of the fleet has air conditioning. I'll touch base on that later, too, when we talk about contracts. As far as some of the challenges we're having right now, this is especially here in the Mount Pleasant area, we should be running those 370 buses every day. But currently, Durham only has 321 drivers available. So it's 37 short of 100%. But to give you some idea, I also serve on the board of the South Carolina Association of Pupil Transportation, and I represent Charleston, Berkeley, and Dorchester counties. There's not a school district in the state that has 100% bus drivers at this point. So we do try to collaborate and come up with ideas on what somebody else is doing that may help us do things better. For Greenville is the closest to us as far as economy and size. And currently Greenville, they run 367 buses a day, but they have 330 drivers. So they're also 37 drivers short. That was as of 2 weeks ago. So by the area, though, for Area A, which is Mount Pleasant and Ondo, we have 94 routes that are run by Durham and 5 routes that are run by Coastal Bus Lines. Then we have 84 drivers available in the Mount Pleasant area. That's if everybody shows up to work every day, 100%. So, again, we're 10 short of that 100% from a bus driver contractor standpoint. Now, we started the year with 15 open routes in the Mount Pleasant area, and they've been able to reduce that to 10. So that number's been going in a positive way. It's dropped by a third since the beginning of school until now. And I believe we're in like day 25 school days. Just to give you some idea of some of the things we've done so far in reference to dealing with the driver shortage, is we pulled all of our data from last year and looked at the top 5 routes that were affected all year long last year. And we directed Durham that those routes won't be open at all this year. So we don't continue to negatively affect the same students and the same families for long periods of time. We're currently looking at how do we take that program from this year's data, from like the first 9 weeks or the first period of time in school, and how do we work that into something that's a little more tactical, that we don't wait a year to do it, but we can move some of those routes around. We've been withholding 10% of Durham's monthly invoice. That's what's allowed in the contract for us to do as a recourse for not being able to staff every bus every day with a driver. And last year we solicited a supplemental vendor contract. We had one bidder. That'll tell you, too, like we sent it out to everybody that we knew of that drives buses for a living. We had one vendor, which was Coastal Bus Lines, that was awarded that contract. So far, they've been able to take over 9 bus routes. 5 of those are in Mount Pleasant, and 4 are in the North Charleston area. So what that does is allow the Durham driver to actually freeze that driver up from that route, and then they can go serve on another route. We've also tracked that because it's all about driver retention also. So we haven't lost a driver yet, or Durham has not lost a driver yet because of that turnover part, because our goal is not to replace them with that route, it's to supplement. If we're losing drivers because of the what we're doing, it's not going to help anybody at that particular point. We worked with the state, the state worked with us, graciously so, that they've allowed us to park 5 buses that are supposed to park in Mount Pleasant in the North Charleston area. Recruitment-wise, Durham gets a lot more drivers from the North Charleston, Goose Creek, Monk's Corner area from their pool. And actually having the driver be able to get on their bus in North Charleston, drive the route, and then go back, because most bus drivers are off in the middle of the day, versus having to get on a shuttle in the morning, come over to Mount Pleasant, and wait on everybody else to get back before they do it. And the state was gracious enough to waive our mileage fees, because they pay for the maintenance and the fuel on their buses. We investigated we have activity bus drivers around the district that their full-time job is like a coach or a teacher or a teacher aide. Last year, we dug deep into that, trying to find drivers to drive school buses that were interested in doing that. I didn't have any takers at that particular time, but we'll continue to work that process if somebody does become available. We're currently working with our food services unit. We have identified 5 of their workers because they also are having an issue with workers, just like everybody else is at this point. So we'll work with them to see if we can get those food service drivers. This is where the morning and the afternoon numbers really come into effect, too, because our food service workers get off normally in the afternoon around 1:30. At that point, we're not leaving the bus lots until right around that same time frame. So you can tell from the numbers, we need more buses in the afternoon than we do in the morning, just because of the ridership. And that we think they will be able to help us mitigate some of the afternoon issues we have with students still waiting to get to school because we don't have enough capacity to actually get them home on a shared ride, which we're more successful at in the morning because of the numbers than we are in the afternoon. Durham is currently decentralizing their training programs. So they've traditionally always had their training at the Azalea lot in North Charleston. That's just the way it's always been set up. What it causes for them, especially when normally bus companies and school districts either, they don't hire a driver until they actually get a CDL. So they'll actually bring them in and pay them stipends for training to help them get it through, but they're not getting a regular paycheck. So the thought is if they can get closer to the worker and actually do the training here in Mount Pleasant, then that's less fuel and time that that potential bus driver is having to spend out of their pocket to become one. Contractually, where we were and where we're going, we had an ad hoc committee that met last spring to talk about what we should do, how we should be set up. So this current contract sunsets in June of 2020 at the end of this school year. And we put out a best value bid solicitation. It's currently out right now. There's some important changes that go along with that. It takes a while to turn something this big. To give you an idea, we run on route buses, 120 Durham buses. So anybody we bring in here has got to have enough capital to actually service that number of routes and to get the buses ready and ready to go for the school year. It's the reason we're where we're at now in the process to make the award sometime later this year. Air conditioning. All vendor buses in the next contract will be required to have air conditioning. The state, as I said before, every new bus they bring in will have air conditioning. I know their goal, Spearman's goal is to have all the at least special needs buses by 2021 for every one of them to have it. And then the rest will cycle through for the regular education buses there. The district's taking over routing, so we'll be making and building the bus routes and dealing with how they're set up in ridership and buses are allocated across the district. And that really just has to do with setting us up to be in a plug-and-play situation in the future. So we own the facilities where the operational parts are, the bus lots, the trailers. By owning routing, it really does become a situation where we don't lose a whole lot of data or control. Like, we control everything other than handing a company, here's your bus routes, and this is what I need you to run. So the other one of the most important pieces, I think, for us was we looked at also breaking the district into more than one zone. So right now, traditionally, we've always had just one vendor in town since we gave up running buses in the 90s because we couldn't get drivers. So that's the reason the district actually went to a private company to begin with. Is breaking the county into two zones and trying to get more than one vendor in here to do business with. I just think it creates an atmosphere, some competition, and it also makes us more, gives us the ability if one is failing, we got somebody else in town that can help us with that, if at all possible. All the withholdings, the driver count is really the number one thing in bus transportation. It's not like a classroom, and I'll just use a few examples because Eric Watson from the Sheriff's Office was on our ad hoc committee, and you can have 300 vacancies at the jailer, at the county jail, and you cover it with overtime. There's still got to be a body there, and you're going to cover it with overtime. If you have a teacher shortage, you still have the ability to put those kids in with these other teachers, make the classroom size a little bit better, but they're still learning. So without a bus driver, there's none of that available. You either have the bus running or you don't. So it definitely is a huge factor for us, and that's really the most important thing that's going to drive whether we're successful or not on a regular basis. With that in mind, we've, with the new bid that's out, moved the withholding from 10% to 15%, and we set it up with a sunset clause with 60 days and then another one 120 days. So that withholding becomes a fine if you don't fix the issue. And really the only issue we have that would cause a withholding of that nature would be driver count, because that's how bad it affects performance. We also added bonuses on that, because if we can't just carry the stick, we got to give the companies the carrot to want to get to that point of having drivers in. So we've placed a 3% monthly bonus for their invoices for if they maintain 110% driver count for the month. And at the end of the year, if you get every month's bonus, then you get a $250,000 bonus. And that's for each zone. So those are just some of the things that we've done for looking forward. I'll be glad to answer any questions you have regarding transportation.
Yeah, so one, can we all get a copy of kind of everything, because I've been taking frantic notes, but I want to be able to disseminate this information to the public in an accurate fashion and not misrepresent anything that you say. The second question is being a bus driver for Durham, is that a part-time job, like an hourly job, or is that a full-time job with benefits? Or
They're guaranteed 6 hours a day. So in every company carries, yeah, the guaranteed 30. It doesn't matter if you work 20. I mean, that's the way they're set up, is because if you have shorter routes, if you work less time, you still get guaranteed 6 hours of pay. And if you work over six, obviously you get money up and above that.
But it's not a full-time job with benefits. It's like an hourly wage.
Bus drivers, yeah, in general, are not normally considered like full-time.
Okay. And then the third question I have is, in this new vendor contract, so one of the things that many parents have commented or suggested is in other school districts, there are apps that the bus is real time, where you can see where the bus is. Because I know there's been cases where children have sat at school for 45 minutes waiting for the bus to come, and there's no knowledge of where that bus is or when it's coming or if it's coming. And I know we were at a bus stop and the bus didn't come, and just through texting found out that it was broken down at Harris Teeter, and then there was a girl who didn't have a cell phone, and so I called her dad. You know, it was just this whole coordination thing. Whereas if there was an app and they say that they exist, they're out there, that that you can have real time views of buses and their status, then it kind of takes away, you know, so that parents can have this, and if the kids have phones, then they can have it, and having some of that knowledge and that comfort there would be helpful, because then if you see the bus is going to, you're going to be 40 minutes late to school, maybe you start trying to find an alternative rather than miss first period.
Yes. So we did pilot two systems in 2016, which is why we're using the Remind app now, but I'll carry you through that in the decision making on why at that particular time we went with Remind instead of a bus tracker app, which was Durham does have. Number one, back then we had a bus fleet from the state that broke down a lot, you know, several times a week all over. And it really boils down to, and I'll use the one we picked first just because I'll talk about the complications of the other one second. So Remind app at the time was free for schools. It's a push notification system. Teachers are using it all over the United States. And that's how they communicate with their students, parents, and projects and things like that. So it's a push notification system. It can be texting or email. We actually use texting for everybody that signs up online, and we have an email system for the schools so they can get documentation, and I have it on when they were said, hey, the bus is going to be late to your school. It doesn't require a smartphone. It does require data. So not all of our students and families have the ability to have data, smartphones, and all those things. So it actually would serve more of our students and families than the GPS function. Now, you can do both of those things with what is the system that you're speaking of. Like, you can have the GPS system that does a text part too. But the issue that we run into, and I'll just use right now as an example, I can send a Remind notification to you to say, hey, your bus is going to be late because it broke down, or we're having to double up these routes, and you get the message. But if my solution to for your route is for two buses to actually come pick up those students, then which bus? These two buses already have a designation, so it really there's no way to track where your bus is unless it's your bus with no issues that day, right? Or if it's the bus broke down, now I'm sending another bus for that one. Unless you real-time load that up, you know what I mean? Like right now it broke down and this bus is going and you put it in the database and that's what you're tracking. So it has some limitations there that the other system doesn't. But Remind started charging money this year. So we're actually in the middle of our team with looking at what is our long-term solution for parent and student notification. I don't know what that is right now because we're probably going to have to put out a solicitation to get that business. We're looking at the system we currently use that the district uses to make the phone calls to everybody now to see if it would be useful or we could use that with a vendor. And then we'll be looking at other bus tracker apps also.
Okay. Thank you. Councilman, do you have any questions? Comments?
I have a comment. I think you have the hardest job in the whole world. You may. And I appreciate the work you do. It's so difficult. And, you know, I always wonder sometimes why we're having some of the discussions that we have on this education committee. But I'm really glad we had this one because I didn't know half of the things that you said. And we get asked a lot of questions that I don't know the answers to. And at least I'm leaving here feeling, you know, the overwhelming magnitude of what it takes to move that many people around that many times a day. And we know the labor issue in this town. It affects everything from housing, and you mentioned it yourself, and I'll use it somewhere else, but bus drivers aren't living in Mount Pleasant, you know, a lot of them. So I appreciate what you do, and I appreciate all the information. As Guangming said, I think if we could have some of that in a bulleted form of data, it would help us a lot too.
Yeah, we'll go back. I appreciate it. We'll go back and actually
sure
send you electronic.
Thank you.
With what you need.
Thank you. Councilman Kinney? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, council members, do you feel that we need to take any action on this? I feel like this was just great information that we can disseminate to, you know, I don't think there needs to be any action.
Right. I agree.
Okay.
I think that it would be good to make as we have our minutes in the meeting to wait till we get this information and make that a part of this, of the minutes, of the recorded minutes. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much for coming. The next item on the agenda is the Charleston County School District presentation on potential changes to partial and magnet programs and the impacts on Mount Pleasant. I placed this item on the agenda because I kind of became aware of, you know, there was a presentation at the school board meeting about this potential to eliminate partial magnets, all but one partial magnet in D2, which encompasses Mount Pleasant. And just to be clear, this is happening throughout the district. There will be elimination of partial magnets throughout the district. So it's not just Mount Pleasant not being singled out for this, this potential change. But I wanted, as the education committee, to understand what impact that's going to have on our schools and on our students, and both in the short and the long term, and possibly have council sort of weigh in. Even though we don't have jurisdiction over the school board, I think that our opinion, you know, and representing our constituents is something that we should do. So, Kate, or, yep.
Barry's got a chart, and I'm going to be her assistant.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us here again. My name is Terry Nichols. I serve, my title is Associate Superintendent for the Charleston County School District, and at this time I work in the Division of Human Resources and have a lot of different responsibilities, teacher evaluation being one, employee relations, and then special projects. I would also like to just note that I have lived in the town of Mount Pleasant for 42 years. Have worked for the school district for almost that long, and served as the principal at Bell Hall Elementary for almost 10 years. So very vested in the community, and I want to just thank the town of Mount Pleasant for everything that you do for all the citizens all the time. And thank you for allowing me to be here today. A few months ago, we formed a committee at the request of our superintendent and the school board to take a look at partial magnets. In our district, we have a number of magnet partial magnet options. They were all started at different times in the school district for different reasons over a period of many years. We took a look at 13 partial magnets, and the document that I handed you is the one that the committee shared with the committee of a whole meeting in September as recommendations coming from the committee that took a look at partial magnets. Because the partial magnets were created at different times and for different reasons, some of the reasons they were created were, so there were neighborhood schools that were having dwindling enrollment. That could have been because communities were aging and young folks had not started moving in. There's also poor test scores in some of the areas of town where they felt like they needed to, we needed to infuse new life into that. That's really not the case in Mount Pleasant. If you take a look at all of our schools here, we're very fortunate that we have excellent rated schools throughout our district, elementary, middle, and high school. And so we took a look, though, at all of the partial magnet programs and the configurations of them and made recommendations to the school board. I want to let everyone know that these were just recommendations to the board. The board has not voted on any of this, and they're soliciting input from a variety of stakeholders. So I think Sarah and some other folks have said, there we took a look at the partial magnets in Mount Pleasant. Of those, they are James B. Edwards. When partial magnets were started, they had to have a focus. They needed to have a focus, a program or a focus. James B. Edwards chose the Leader in Me Global Leadership focus, and the recommendation is to eliminate their partial magnet status, but allow they would be able to continue with their program that they had in place. Some partial magnets, when they were formed, got additional teacher points. Some got none, some got one, some got two. Whatever you got when you created your partial magnet, the recommendation from the committee was to allow that to stand so that your program could continue. Jenny Moore, Creative Arts, has gone through a lot of iterations. It was started many, many years ago. As one of the first magnet schools, it was started in the 80s, and it was a computer magnet when computers were just, and kindergarten was not full day. Jenny Moore had the first full day kindergarten in their magnet program. Since then, it's changed into from being a computer magnet into creative arts, arts-infused magnet, and it morphed in from being a District 2 magnet into to being classified as a partial magnet. And so the recommendation from the board is to keep it as the District 2 magnet school with an attendance zone and an application for magnet seats. Sullivan's Island has the program coastal environmental theme, and it brings some extra students over to the school from other areas of town, mostly from other parts of Mount Pleasant. And the recommendation is to eliminate the partial magnet status, but they are able to keep their program in place with their additional points. And then, of course, Lang has the STEM focus, nationally recognized STEM school. We want their program to continue and their elimination of their partial magnet status. There may be extra seats in some of these schools once the partial magnet is, and you heard, I think, our school board chair for District 2, Ms. Johnson, talked about the transfer process. That would still be in effect, the transfer process that normally that parents can apply for that. The other part of this recommendation went to, and you can see on the other pages are all the other 13 partial magnets throughout Charleston County School District. And the very last page of the handout says if this goes through, the future state would be Jenny Moore would be our magnet program for East of the Cooper, along with East Cooper Charter Montessori School. One more thing I just want to forget. If you are currently in a magnet, a partial magnet school in any of these schools, and you want to remain, you are grandfathered until you age out of that school. So if you're in there as a second grader, you can continue to stay in there. That was the recommendation from the committee to the board, that we grandfather those students. Yes.
So looking at this last page, two questions. So by naming the districts and then the schools, so you're saying only students from those constituent districts would be eligible to attend those programs?
Yes, that's the right.
So folks from Mount Pleasant D2 would be eligible for Jenny Moore. But East Cooper Montessori is not a magnet. It's a charter school.
It's a charter, but it is it's the Montessori option for East of the Cooper.
Okay.
If any parents want that, that's their there's Montessori options throughout our district.
Okay.
And East Cooper is Montessori.
And then just as an example, so Buist Academy, I know there's a lot of Mount Pleasant parents that send their kids to Buist. Nobody from Mount Pleasant would be eligible to go to Buist anymore.
According to this, according to this recommendation, that would be a magnet school for District 20. And if there were spaces available, then they would have to we could have a lottery system for the empty seats if there were seats available.
Okay, sorry to interrupt you. Please continue.
That's basically all I was going to say. I think is just and to answer any questions. So you really came at the exact right time. And Kate may want to make a comment or two.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for inviting us to be here today. Tom O'Rourke is responsible for me being on the Charleston County School Board. So
thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. So I just wanted to just reiterate, as what Terry said, you know, these are recommendations that came from a committee, a small committee of staff, to the committee of the whole, which is the full board. We had that meeting in September. And we're now doing listening sessions all throughout the month of October. We have one here in Mount Pleasant on the 16th at 6 p.m. And I just want to encourage people to come to those. We are really listening to people and gathering input on these recommendations already. Based on the input I've heard, I think there will be some tweaks to the recommendations. You know, and I'll be super candid because I that's what I do. When we as a board, if you follow school board stuff at all, you know a number of us were elected in 2014 and we said, my gosh, our children have been in the system. We have 50,000 kids in the system, and school board wasn't doing a whole lot to really make significant change. We're very lucky over here in Mount Pleasant and on Sullivan's Island that we have really strong schools, and I will give the majority of that credit to the fact that we've had great leaders over here, Terry being one of them. We have super strong principals. We have SE Ready data that'll be out, I think, tomorrow, and you'll see that our Mount Pleasant schools continue to really perform well and serve our students. But we weren't doing that throughout the county. We're not serving all of our students in the way we needed to, and so we're looking at a number of things that we as a district can do to improve what we're doing for kids. So one of our recommendations that came out of that same meeting is that we look at early childhood in a different way. As Terry said, Jenny Moore was our first full-day kindergarten. I have a 28-year-old child who went to Mount Pleasant Academy in half-day kindergarten, which was literally a joke because it was like 2 hours and 2.5 hours. It was ridiculous. So we still have, you know, we just have had full day kindergarten for about 22 years. So there's lots that we could be doing better. So one of the things we've talked about is offering 4-year-old full day with certified teachers, kindergarten, 4-year-old kindergarten in certain areas of the district. So that's an example of the things we're working on. When it came to the partial magnets, really the goal for the partial magnets, as Terry mentioned, was if you've lived here for a long time, Lang and Jenny Moore both struggled with enrollment. It's hard to believe now because they don't now, but for a while they did. And that's one of the reasons that Lang became a STEM school and was able to market to the rest of the county. Had a great principal there, and again, I give a lot of credit there for what they've been able to do. So the committee did a rubric and looked at all of the partial magnet schools throughout the district to see, are they really doing what they said they were doing? Are we offering that to the students in a way that should be? Is it rigorous? And really, out of all of our partial magnets, Lang was doing the best job, and some of our partial magnets really weren't doing anything other than having 2 extra teacher points. At our meeting last week, we had some parents come from a school that's not in Mount Pleasant, and they basically said, please don't take our partial magnet away. Please don't take those 2 extra teachers. Then we'll be like every other school. And so as a board member, I want every school to have the same offering. So what I'd rather say is, okay, let's bring all our schools up, give everybody else those 2 extra teacher points to do what is what they need at their school. So that's the reason, one of the reasons behind some of these recommendations is we spend a lot of money busing kids all over Mount Pleasant to go to Sullivan's Island. It, right now, there are about 300 kids that go to Sullivan's Island Elementary that are zoned for Sullivan's Island Elementary. The rest are coming from other parts, mostly of Mount Pleasant, and the committee felt like we ought to look at having Sullivan's Island have a bigger zone. Now, we can make that decision, but then the constituent board, as Sarah talked about, gets to implement that. So that's a hard challenge to have because they have been doing a lot of rezoning recently. So that's the discussion we want to have. Somebody said, well, it doesn't negatively impact our schools to have partial magnets. Well, it does sometimes when having the partial magnet name creates a perception that this school is better than this school when really they're not. They just have two extra teacher points and that status. So I'm not saying that about Sullivan's Island. I'm just saying about that all of those partial magnets in other areas of the district. We have a middle schools where people perceive that one school is so much better because of that partial magnet status. So those are there. That's why we have this discussion. I would say GM actually asked me, you know, is this a precursor to us making changes with the countywide magnets, like the high schools, which are academic magnet, school of the arts, and military magnet. And I've not heard any conversation from board members about doing that other than we've received recommendation on changing the admission criteria a little bit for the academic magnet, which would make sure right now we have, I'd say, probably a quarter of the applicant population is from outside of Charleston County, which those kids get in by state law. They are allowed to do that if they own property, they're $300 worth of property, which is crazy. So that's something we need to look at because we really feel strongly that Charleston County kids ought to be going to academic magnet. I have heard some talk about the BUST recommendation. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, to hear that the board wants to do something a little bit different than making it just a D20 constituent magnet. I do think there is the support on the board to expand BUST, so to maybe put the middle school on a different campus so that we could offer it that opportunity to more kids. So those are just some things that I've heard talk about. But again, I just want to reiterate, these are recommendations coming from a group that's done a lot of research, that's been involved in the district for a long time. We'll have listening sessions. Those are published on the CCSD website. People are welcome to come to the other sessions other than just the one here in Mount Pleasant. It's at Lang on October 16th at 6. And people are welcome to come to our committee of the whole meeting or our board meeting. Second Tuesday of the month is a committee of the whole. We usually start about 1, and then our board meeting's the fourth Monday of the month. We usually start about 5:15, and we have public comment in both of those, so if anybody wants to come and give us comment. I don't think we'll take any action before our October board meeting, and it might be the October board meeting where we take some action and then the November where we take. So
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate you both and for both of the school board members, Joyce and Kate, for coming to speak. I have a couple questions. One, I see that the ultimate goal is to raise the floor for schools across Charleston County. And I know Terry said in her presentation that the teacher points that these schools have gotten or, you know, whether it's one or two or zero, I guess some got zero, they will retain those. There's no plan to remove those. And then from your talk of the busing, it seems like the busing with these partial magnet elimination, there will no longer be busing, so that'll be a cost savings. So I guess if you want to give two teacher points to all the schools, two more teacher points to all the schools in the county, where are those points coming from? Is the elimination of the buses then creating the funding to give this teacher points to everyone to kind of raise the floor? And then, so that's kind of my question.
So I think when the committee was talking and they realized, because I was there for this meeting, and they realized, wow, we're busing kids all over the district. And it's expensive when, you know, it's one thing when people wanted us to open Beckham 912 and keep, let kids stay at Wando if they wanted to. I said to Mr. Broey, can we do that? He's like, We could, but it would be ridiculously expensive because we'd be busing kids from one neighborhood, some to Wando, some to Beckham. And so that's what we do with the partial magnets. I mean, as an example, for Sullivan's Island, I mean, we have kids coming from every elementary school, so every, you know, lots of different neighborhoods to Sullivan's Island. And that's just the biggest group that we have in the D2, D1 area.
And they're even coming from outside Mount Pleasant,
they
right?
They are coming Sullivan's from outside Mount
Pleasant. And there's buses provided for those children as well coming from outside Mount Pleasant.
Now, yeah, not for Jenny Moore, but for the other partial magnets there are. So I think we, yep, no, that we do, yes?
Just
district two. Okay. So.
But if they can get to a bus, if they live in North Charleston, they can get to a bus stop someplace, you know, across the bridge.
Right. So
ride to Sullivan's Island.
Yeah. Last year, Sullivan's Island had 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, like 10 kids from outside of D1 or D2. So most of them were Mount Pleasant. But I think originally that the thought was, sure, we can save all that bus money to fortify the classrooms. I'm sure Jeff and Jeff over there would say, well, we're going to save that money. We really ought to put it back into busing somehow so that we can, you know, can solve the issues that Jeff Scott talked about. But I think the board is committed to spending the money that it needs to fortify all of our schools and have equitable offerings. I mean, one of our long-term goals is to have world languages in elementary schools. We have that now at a couple of Mount Pleasant schools, some because parents go and, you know, raise money for that. We have that as a part of the partial magnet program at James B. Edwards, and that program would stay. But I think I don't think we've looked at yet, okay, exactly what is that dollar going to cost us, because we're looking at so many changes right now.
So with Lang, and just so that our parents are clear, Lang's STEM focus will remain at that school, should the partial magnet status be taken away.
Correct.
Okay. And then the question I have is just on logistics of if kids are grandfathered in, so then you'll still be busing those kids from outside the district until the years go by and they finish the program. If it needs to be rezoned, like, I guess, how do you create enough space at the school to do an effective rezoning? For example, year one, say that this goes through in Sullivan's Island, year one, 40% of their kindergarten class is now empty. That headcount is dropped. If they fill those seats with transfers, then they're never going to create enough seats. You see what I'm saying? They're never going to create enough seats over time to create room for a rezoning. But if they leave those seats empty, then the funding for that school will diminish because of
Having less kids.
Sure. You know, the headcount.
And I think the biggest challenge there is Sullivan's Island. The rest of our schools deal with a student population that goes up and down on every year. They might have 40 more kids. I think we have 50 or even more, 90 more kids this year in kindergartens throughout the district than we had planned for. Just more kids were coming. So I think it's not easy. It would be hard. I think it will be hardest at Sullivan's Island because there are so many kids that are there on the partial magnet process. So I think it would be something we'd have to, you know, I don't know that for Sullivan's Island and for any other school that has that many kids coming through the partial magnet, we have a couple of other schools that are closed, that would be something we would implement next year. Again, the constituent board has to do the rezoning. I think we would have to look at, do we tier that? Do we do some schools next year, other schools 2 or 3 years from now? I think it's going to depend on what recommendation comes out of the board meeting. I don't think we're going to, there's not a scenario where we want, in Mount Pleasant, all of our schools are close to capacity or at capacity or over capacity. So, I don't think and they are used to, okay, I've got 10 more kids, so I get 20 more kids, so I get another teacher. They're used to a little bit of that. We do have schools in the county, though, that are at 200 kids or 300 kids. And another recommendation that we have is combining some of those schools and turning another school into an early childhood school or closing schools, because our goal is to have elementary schools that are at least 500, middle schools that are at you know, in the 800 range.
Because of economies of scale, right? Yes, if there's the facility cost or
yes.
whatever versus the...
Yes.
So with Lang, there's 300 partial magnet seats at Lang. Is that correct?
For this year, there are. There hadn't been in the past. In the past, they had about 80, I think.
As the housing grew and the folks started really moving in.
Yeah, they had about 100. Last year, they had 80 from Cario and 28 from Moultrie, and then 14 from St. James Santee, and then just a teeny bit from other schools. But the constituent board did a rezoning for middle schools because Cario was at capacity, Lang was at capacity basically when it opened, and they added, the district added 300 seats to Moultrie, so the constituent board had to rezone, so they rezoned and moved a lot of kids to Mount Moultrie because they have more space, and then opened those seats for partial magnet kids for Lang. So this, as of this year, they do. Now, some kids have stayed who are zoned to for Moultrie. They've stayed at Lang because they were grandfathered in, so that they, so, I mean, there's a lot of, there'd be a lot of factors to look at for that.
Thank you. Gentlemen, do you have any, Kevin? Councilman Cunane?
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to discuss the impact of that. I've heard a lot about people, you know, just to be the bearer of the truth here, we have a bullying problem in our schools. Mm-hmm. So kids, some parents choose these magnet options as a way to get their kid somewhere else out of a bad situation. How is this, how are these changes going to impact that possibility for those families?
One of the things that will remain in place, that we have in place now, will remain in place for all of our schools, is our transfer policy. And so we sometimes we call that, and parents can apply to attend a different school, and they write out their reasons. Oftentimes, there are hardship reasons, and sometimes it's bullying. We do take a look at when those come in. The constituent board does a really good job of, you know, circling back to the school to make sure that the school knew about the bullying situation, gave an opportunity for the school to help doing that. So there are times when parents come in and say, my child is bullied, but no one at the school knew because nobody told anybody. So we do try to address that. But there is an avenue for parents to request a different school if they're having that kind of an issue. But as a school person, we always want the opportunity to correct that because we have a really strong bullying policy, anti-bullying, in a program in place.
I have to disagree, ma'am. The billing policy is really weak.
But we've written a new one. Have you seen the latest?
Progressive discipline allows a bully to get away with numerous things before anything happens to them. That's the fundamental problem. But that same issue, while I'm on that, impacts your busing problems because and buses, people will drive their kid to school instead of take the bus because of bullying. May not even get reported, but that goes on all over the place. Kids are getting bullied on the bus because the culture of the school district is we look the other way about bullying. And we don't call it bullying when you know, unless there's a physical mark and escalation in the action of the bully. And what I suggested, and I know this isn't on the agenda for this topic, but is there's kids in every school that are treated poorly, but there's not that many of them. If you were victim-focused and watch the kid who's isolated, the bullies will come to that kid, and you'll know who the bullies are. So the next question, just on the same time, on the school.
Can I address that real
quick?
Sure,
absolutely.
And I certainly hear you on that. I would disagree that we have a culture of bullying in the district. I think I would hope, and I have seen where when there is a bullying issue, I mean, my kids went to school here. I have nieces in school here and nephews. And if there is a bullying issue, parents certainly need to report that to the school. And if for whatever reason it isn't being resolved and your child is continuing to be bullied, well, we need to escalate that. And I would say that, you know, maybe sometimes that isn't happening in the way that it should. And we there's a process for that, and we should follow up on that.
But these options of other schools, I think it should be easier for a family to say we need to pull the plug on school A and get over to school B just to press the reset button here because it does spin out of control, and the district does the discipline policy does not favor the victim; it favors the bully. And if you're on Facebook, Ms. Darby, and you think it's not going on, I'd like to add you to a few groups where the parents are going.
No, I don't disagree. That
crazy about how much bullying goes on. So the next question is, with a school like Sullivan's Island, if it closes, will siblings also get grandfathered?
It wouldn't close. Just the attendance part of the partial magnet would go away. We grandfather the current students. We haven't talked about whether it's siblings or not. I mean, we've kind of gone both ways on that in the past, and some of that would be what the constituent board decides.
Okay.
So I can keep you updated on that. And I'd love to talk with you further about, you know, specific.
We'll do.
Yeah, we'll do that. Okay.
All right. Tom, do you have any?
No, ma'am.
No, ma'am. All right. Well, taking a look at this item on the agenda, do you see, I'm inclined that we bring this to full council for discussion and possible recommendation of a letter kind of crystallizing our, you know, I mean, I guess we haven't expressed our opinions on this, but if you wish to express your opinion on this, of your sense of whether or not this is something that you think we as a town should support or recommend that more time be taken to look at this or how it's implemented.
I think it's still in the construction phase. So once we see what the listening sessions produce, I won't be here, but the committee could probably look at it once we know actually what's going to happen.
Well, I think they were looking at taking some action in October.
Won't
is that
take
correct?
Any action. Well, what my suggestion would be for you guys would be to see what comes out of our October Committee of the Whole meeting, because we might – so we – might make some recommendations at the committee of whole. We won't take action on that, and then until the October board meeting. I don't know if that gives you enough time.
When's the October board meeting?
The October board meeting's the fourth Monday in October. I don't know what that is. I don't have my phone in front of me. But just because I would hate for you to make some recommendations and we come out of the committee of the whole with some tweaking.
Something very
stuff.
Different.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Something very different. Would just be my thought.
I don't think we should. I don't think we should take this to full council to discuss. If we felt strongly about something, maybe we should take it to them. I mean, for a letter to be written. But I would even have a problem with that because, you know, me personally, I don't have any of the information that any of the groups had to have them get to the decision that they made. And I'm not actually. I don't even want it. Now, I don't mean that disrespectfully.
I totally understand
that's not
that.
What I do. But so I would caution us to make sure that we stay between, you know, stay in our own lanes of what we do here. Unless we had overwhelming notice of our residents being put in a situation that might not be good. But at the end of the day, the letter that we send just goes across the bridge and they say thank you and then make their decision. But again, I'm uncomfortable making any decision on anything I'm not really prepared to make, and I don't know this, and I'm probably at a disadvantage too because my children are all old. But so I don't know if that made any sense at all. But I'm not in favor of taking anything to the council right now.
All right. Well, why don't we? Put this on, well, I guess you're not going to be here next month, but we can put it on the agenda for next month to have an update, this same item, to have an update on any progress that the school district has made or changes to these recommendations that are coming through. And then that also gives us an opportunity for a month to solicit feedback from constituents to this committee or to the full council so that we have a better understanding of what distinct issues are facing our constituents and what impact this will have on them personally. So,
and I'd also like to add, this was good, and I know it took a lot of people's time to come here and do this, but it helps us a lot of people's time to come here and do this, but It helps us a lot of people's time to come here and do this, but.